Marty, thanks so much for doing this. We want to open up, obviously, with the obvious question. How are you doing? How's your family doing? What is a day-to-day existence like for Martin St. Louis right now?
We're fine through these, you know, crazy times. My oldest son lived in Detroit at the time, so he's going to be 17. He came home right away. Mm-hmm. And I have two other boys, 15 and 12. So we quarantined pretty much, you know, in our house for a while. And eventually just saw the data and stuff just was not looking good. I'm in Connecticut, and I ended up just packing the family and going to Florida. We've been in Florida for a while and quarantined for a couple of weeks, and now we're kind of living the way life is down here, which is a little bit more open. Mm-hmm. You know, the boys are golfing, and we're able to get some ice. And so we have more of a normal life, I guess, than what we had back home.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, yours is a very strong hockey family. Like the San Luis, like, hockey didn't end, you know, at the end of your career. This is a hockey family, the San Luis. What are you doing to quench that thirst right now?
Well, when we were home in Connecticut, you know, we just did a lot of stuff in the garage. And, you know, I have enough gym equipment and was able to, you know, put them to help them out through some workouts and whatnot, and working on things in the garage and hands and shots. And actually, I kind of enjoyed that part. I did a lot of that on my own playing, and now I get the three boys and trying to work on their games and trying to, you know, help them out in some of the things they need to work on. And they're all kind of doing it together. So it's actually pretty cool.
Berkey, go ahead.
Hey, Marty, it's Berkey. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks, Berkey.
So I want to talk about, before you got to the NHL, the University of Vermont Catamounts, 95-96. You had 85 points, and you lost in double overtime in the Frozen Four final game. Tell us about that.
It's funny because I was on the Zoom last night with my college teammate. You know, and some of you don't know, I played with, you know, Timmy Thomas and Eric Perrin, who ended up winning the cup with me in 04, and had a career in the NHL in Europe. We got together last night and actually watched a Lake State game, which is the game before. Johnny Graham was in that. You know, that 95-96 team was just a great team. You know, we had a lineup of seniors, and they were great leaders, and they gave us a lot. We had some role players, and obviously our top line was really good, and we had a guy by the name of J.C. Ruid. He was 6'4", scored 29 goals that year. My centerman, Eric, had 29 goals. I had 29 goals. So it was a special group. And then, you know, we had in the back, we had Timmy, you know, and Timmy was unbelievable goalie. And it's funny, I hope Timmy doesn't mind me talking about that, because I found out something last night about Timmy. Is Timmy was a late addition. I came in that 93. Timmy was my class, but our starting goalie was supposed to be a junior from Montreal, and he's Christian Soucy. He signed with Chicago in July, I believe, and now they're scrambling to find a goalie. And Timmy had gone to the U.S. Festival that summer at a pretty good run, I guess. But rewind like 6 months before the U.S. Festival, Timmy was a third goalie in the NHL and playing in the North American Hockey League. He was a third goalie in like November. And he just told that story last night on the Zoom. And he actually played out. He went to play out. So he was a skater for a little bit because he wasn't playing. So he wanted to play. So he played as a forward. And Christmas time happened, and he went – one of the goalies, I think, he said he was from Alaska and went home and had a tough time getting back or something. And then the other goalie got hurt. So Timmy got the net after Christmas because the other goalies couldn't play. And he never gave the net back. And then he's gone to the festival, and that's how we actually got him, you know, because they saw him there. And so he was a late addition. I mean, gosh, what a great call on taking that kid. I mean, without Timmy, we don't have the success we had in college. And he was such a great competitor and a teammate. And I'm so happy he got inducted into the U.S. Hall of Fame. And, you know, he's, it was special times for sure.
So, Marty, you go from Vermont and into your foray into the professional hockey and you know, spend some time in the American League. And in over your first sort of 3-4 NHL seasons, you play a couple hundred games and score just over 90 points. And then something changes for you, at least statistically, if you look at your career. What clicked for you sort of heading into that 2002-2003 season where you doubled your goal total and point total and sort of took off into the offensive force that we knew you as in the NHL?
I mean, for me, it was definitely a progression at the NHL level. Every level I played, I always put numbers. I always felt good. I always felt like I was one of the better players on the ice. When I got to the NHL, I was almost like, intimidated by all the stars and everything, and I almost, you know, was selling myself short, you know, and eventually, it just started gradually gaining confidence and just turning it around and just changing my thinking a little bit. And it really, I really found out that, you know, if you don't believe in yourself, nobody will. And I really start, you know, turning that in my mind and start playing with more confidence. And, you know, what's the worst case scenario? Like I'm, you know, I was getting scratched. So what was the worst case scenario? I'm going to get scratched again. Like, you know, for me, changing my thinking, there was so much more upside than, you know, staying the way I was. And obviously with, you know, it was a gradual thing. And then Torts gave me the opportunity and the players that I was playing with, you know, I had Richards at center and Le Cavalier at center, and I would bounce back and forth. And I either play with Modine or Fedotenko on the left side. I mean, those guys have, you know, heck of a career, and they were awesome people. So for me, it was definitely a progression. And once I got to the top, I definitely felt comfortable, but it was definitely a uncomfortable beginning.
You know, and we're talking to Martin St. Louis, Hall of Fame forward. One of the things that I always admired about your game, every time I watched you play, well, first of all, you never made excuses. And second of all, Marty, it always seemed as if you had a chip on your shoulder. And we can understand where that all came from. You never lost that, did you? Because it never seemed as if you did. You always skated like it seemed you had something to prove. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely something that I always felt I had something to prove. Even when I was a star in this league, I felt like I had to do it again, you know. And, mm-hmm. and somebody, the big difference between, you know, a third, fourth line guy and a guy who's you know, at the top on the team and in the league, every year, you know, people are looking at you. Is he doing it again? And now you're bringing the age factor and you're aging and stuff, you know. Is he on his decline? It always felt like there was always something to prove, like you said. And I think for me, I think I was a driven individual, and I didn't want to let that go. I want to stay there, and I definitely owe a lot to, you know, Ben Prentice and my trainer. I met Ben like I was like 29 years old, 30 years old. I don't think if I don't meet Ben, I'm as good in my late 30s, in my mid to late 30s. I don't think I sign another 4-year deal. You know, at 37. You know, I led the league in scoring at 37. I don't think I do that. And Ben really helped me out, you know, staying fit and staying strong. And, you know, and the league was constantly getting faster. And as you know, as you age, you always feel you're getting slower. But I actually feel like the league is getting faster. I wasn't really getting slower, if it makes sense. And so you really had to, you know, make sure you take care of yourself. And I felt I did that.
Berkey?
Yeah, and Marty, I want to focus on the age of your first NHL game. You were 23. Your first breakout season in 2002-2003, you were 27. And yet you ended up with well over 1,000 NHL games and 1,000 NHL points. There's a lesson in there for a young player about perseverance, and there's a lesson in there for parents that it doesn't always have to happen right away.
Yeah, for me, honestly, like going to college, I mean, at 18, I was 160 pounds, you know. I wasn't worried about it. I wasn't in the NHL at 18, honestly. You know, I was just trying to get better every year. But I really liked the fact that I just had a longer runway. You know, going to college gave me a longer runway that I could just develop and get better. And, you know, and I felt when I hit 22, 23, I was kind of ready. And, you know, for me, if I played junior and it didn't pan out at 20, I don't know where I'm at. I needed those extra years to develop. And see, it's not a race to get up there. It's once you get there, make sure you're ready. You know, so I, people want to get called up and stuff. Yeah, but let's make sure you get called up when you're ready. Don't get called up just to get called up, you know, because this might be your only chance that you're going to get the show.
Marty, I have a question fairly specific to our Toronto audience here. I worked a little bit with Sheldon Keefe for the Toronto Marlies and got to know him, and he's made quite sort of an evolution personally as a man from his early days as a player to the head coach that he is today. I wonder what your recollections of him are as a player. You guys would have been, I guess, rookies together or around that time in Tampa Bay, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I believe we came around the same time, and I remember Sheldon really well. He was a worker, you know. He was a worker, and he was a quiet kid, liked to laugh, but, you know, he went to the rink and worked every day, and he played that way, you know. But he wasn't a big guy like me, you know, and it was still a big big man's game. And but he played. He was feisty, and he played with a lot of energy. I enjoyed Sheldon when he was with us. And I'm not surprised that he's having success as a coach, because I always felt he was working on his game all the time and always – trying to get better, and I can see why he's had success.
You know, speaking of coaching, we all know you're an outstanding youth hockey coach. You talked about, you know, your sons and working out in the garage and firing pucks, and it's the summer of shooting pads. You know, I was having this conversation with someone a few days ago. You know, I wonder if, and you'll be a lot closer to it with more insight than I have, Marty, I wonder if this is the summer, and I'm talking about youth hockey, or as we call it, minor hockey here in Canada. This is the summer where we see a shooting spike, where all of a sudden the shots take this huge leap, because essentially, with, you know, the majority of rinks closed, that's really all they have to work with. Are you gonna pick up the theory that I'm putting down here? We're gonna see a shooting spike with youth hockey.
I mean, you'll definitely maybe see the skill. I mean, it's hard to believe that the kids can get more skilled than they are right now. But, you know, that's what the kids are doing right now. They're working on that. And listen, I can see this. I can see the improvement for my own kids doing what they've been doing for, you know, a few months, and just really focusing on specific, because you're not on a team, you can't skate, you're just focusing on small skill that really can impact your overall game. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I feel the skill level is at an unbelievable place right now. And just the fact that the thought that it could get even higher, it's crazy.
Have your kids asked you at all how to do the Austin Matthews release yet?
No, I can't really teach that. I think they pick it up on their own, honestly, with the you know, the internet and all the social media. So, you know, it's that's one thing that's great about the game today is, you know, some kid does something crazy in Czech or Russia, you know, and you see it instantly, and the kids can really try to imitate that. Where when we grew up, you had to see it on the outdoor rink. You had to be there. You had to see it to be, oh, wow, I should try to do that, you know. You had to be present.
That's an excellent point. Berkey?
Got to ask you about the cup year, Marty. Well, 304, Art Ross Trophy, Stanley Cup. Talk about that team and the run you made.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a perfect balance. We had, you know, I wasn't as young as Richie and Vinny, but, you know, games played, I was probably right around the same, you know, and we were just kind of coming into our own. And we had some swagger with it because of the success we had the year before, too. It was just kind of, you know, we rolled into the next year, and throughout that year, we all had some great success. And then we had brought, you know, obviously Dave Enderchuk, Tim Taylor, you know, then they brought the Sid Daryl Sador at the deadline. Like, we had unbelievable leadership, and Freddie Modine, you know, one of the best human I know, one of the best teammates I've played with, you know, and you had Habib Bulin in that. So, you know, any team that's going to have success, you know, really the backbone is the goalie. So, you know, for me, it all kind of came together, and I think we all learned a lot from each other. I got better playing with guys like Richie and Vinny, and I learned so much from the the leaders on the team, and Dave and Tells and Sid and Mo, and we just kind of roll with it and really felt that we could do it. We weren't worried where we were. We weren't worried at what was supposed to be. We just went after it.
And I got to ask you about the fight. A lot of people, the only thing they remember about that series was the fight. Tell us about the fight.
You know, Vinny was a tough guy, man. I mean, you know, played, scored 50 goals and still fought a lot of guys. And when I played with Vinny, I felt like I always had more room. And I think Vinny, once he fought again like that, it gave him so much confidence and respect. And for us, obviously, it definitely fueled us. Like, we just, like, you know, you want to go block shot with your face when you see him doing that, you know? So it had a huge impact on our success. I think it had a huge impact on my career, on his career, because there was time in the years after that coming back to the bench, and Vinny was like, "Marty, did so-and-so hit you dirty? Did so?" He wanted to know if it was a cheap shot, because he's going after him, you know, which that's a guy who's scoring 50 goals, 40 goals. And I never felt comfortable telling him the truth, because I didn't want him to go fight, you know. But there's plenty of times that if he saw it, there was no, like, he didn't care what the puck was. He came in there and just charged, and it gave me a lot of room.
That's Justin, awesome. We'll finish up with you.
I was hoping to ask you a gear-based question. I'm fascinated to get your thoughts on hockey sticks, and you always used a long stick for a guy your size. Those yellow sticks you used, I think they were Warriors, if I'm not mistaken. Did you try shorter sticks? Do you have thoughts on why you went with a longer stick throughout your career?
I don't know. When I left college, I felt my stick was long, but it just kind of evolved to that. And when I got to the NHL, I definitely felt like the need to have a longer stick to play, because you can play so much better defensively with a long stick than a short stick. And obviously, when I came in, I was, you know, kind of in a defensive role. So to me, it was a perfect fit, you know, and I was used to it. And the yellow stick started with Easton when they, you know, I think in 2002. They had the yellow, the orange, I believe, and I got the yellow. And in 03, the first year I took it, I scored 30 and I went to the All-Star game. So I wasn't switching. And the rest of my career, you know, I was very superstitious. I wasn't switching. I ended up going to Warrior later in my career because Easton was – they were done making my stick. They didn't want to make the yellow stick anymore. So I went to Warrior. But as the game changed, you know – the game became more of a wrist shot and one-timers, a little bit less coming down the wing taking slappers, that, you know, the shorter stick for me with more of a toe curve, more flex, and definitely I got shorter. My stick changed dramatically from my first few years to my last few years. But that should be that way, I feel, because the game changes. As a player, you have to evolve, and the equipment's part of it.
Love these conversations. Marty, you've been generous with your time. Thanks so much to you and your family. All the best. Stay safe. Stay healthy. Look forward to catching up down the road. Always good to catch up with a Hall of Famer. Thanks, Marty.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me. Everyone out there, stay safe, and hopefully we get past this. Thanks much.